agreements to certainly work on and so on, they perhaps have to state that the difference in these revenues. Our people, the lady that we want to have in healthcare, could be doing this.
Well, let me make 2 points, because I think you're raising the right question. Number one, the salary payments by the oil company to natives themselves, which will be high, and will be year-round continuous employment, will give an economic base to certain existing native communities, such as Barrow. By doing so, it gives them an opportunity to develop into proper communities, provided that the government or the other agencies are involved, do the kind of municipal planning that's needed. But the other point, and which is a much larger one, is simply this. At 500,000 barrels a day, which is the minimum flow of a pipeline, the state will be getting $160,000 a day minimum. That's in addition to what it gets out of the Cook Inlet, what it may get out of other fields. If that pipe is used up, not to its maximum, but close to it, say 2 million barrels a day, that becomes $600,000 a day cash flow to the state, day in and day out, year after year, decade after decade, presumably. This changes the name of the game in Alaska. Becomes the most fundamental thing that ever happened here. We've had industries before. Gold didn't pay any taxes to Alaska. Fisheries have paid very little taxes to Alaska. Timber produces very little revenue. The first thing that's given the state of Alaska the capacity to determine its own future and to run this state is oil and the revenues that can potentially be derived from it. Now, having said that, the point is, with the ball in its own hands, the state can do things all over this state. The flexibility of state revenues is it's capable of being expended anywhere within the confines of the state. So it is simply to within the limitations of the imagination of the people who run this state government, whether we wisely or unwisely use the revenues that derived. But those revenues are going to be big enough and of long enough duration to let this state become more of a model state than any other single state in the Union. Well, I don't think you can. I don't think it's wise. I don't think our cities are going to reach that size. To me, the only place that's going to develop into a large size in Alaska for a long time is the Anchorage area. And you can expand that into the Kenai, the Anchorage area, and the rail belt if you wish. And this becomes basically the population center of Alaska. There's very big cost reasons for that. There's big transportation reasons for that. You have sea shipping. You have direct air connections to Europe, to the Orient, to the States, to the East Coast, so on. It's a place where the banking structure is. It's a place where the headquarters of companies are. It's where the big impact of oil is coming in human terms in Alaska. This is where the oil companies' basic large number of people are going to be confined, that are in Fairbanks. So when you get out to the smaller communities along the coast, I think the problem is this. They're living in a subsistence economy with a maximum of 50 people. When you introduce a modern culture and a modern money economy, those places have no economic base. So there is a tendency to collapse inward on the point which has some reason. Either you put administration there, you put hospitals, you put state facilities, courts, these things. Or you do something specific, as we are at Barrow. Then there's reasons for them to grow in size. Now, if you then reinforce that, as I think we should, and let me tell you, my advice to my company is, very frankly, we seek to hire to a very great extent in a place such as Barrow. We then seek to follow that up by making capital available to the people so they get housing and these other things, so that we make an input to the community on a sensible basis, which enables it to grow and develop the way a community ought to grow. But it won't be a big community. None of these will be big. They'll be, at most, moderate-sized towns. So I don't really see this growth picture the way some might. I think Alaska is going to grow, certainly. But I think it's going to be a long time before it has a great big city or any really great size population. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'm rather thankful that it is that way. I personally would rather see us in Alaska concentrate on making this a good place for the people we have living here far more than on trying to bury our poverty and our other problems and emphasize the import of additional people. And I think this is what we can do with our oil revenues.
Many
people have spoken this evening about the need to involve Native peoples in the planning and construction of their communities. I'd like to ask Mrs. McKay what the policy of the Alaska State Housing Authority has been in regards to their remote housing program along these lines.
Well, actually, I think we have been. It sounds like a natural answer, but I do frankly think that we have been quite successful in involving the Native people in the remote housing project because, well, we formed a housing committee of representatives from different areas, and the choice of location for remote housing was really theirs, and we needed, this was really a natural and a practical arrangement aside from the point of involvement, because they supplied much of the information about whether a community was permanent enough to have to sustain a remote housing that was necessary.
Yes.
I'd like to ask Mr. Fitzgerald a question concerning this concept of development of communities south of the Brooks Creek, principally for hard metal mining. We would hope that these communities would be self-sustaining. And have their own economic base so that they could provide for their own development and growth. But the event that this may not completely cover the required development cost for such communities, how do you see the role of the state government, in view of your earlier comment on the oil revenue, how do you see the role of the state government participating in the development of communities that area?
Well, it's not the role, in the event of a single industry, it's not the role of the government to subsidize. I think it's terribly important. It refers to all aspects, transportation and otherwise. The role of government in such situations seems to me the planning function to help with the layout and location, with the sewers, the water, and this kind of thing. These are not going to be company towns unless some company comes in which is new. Kennecott would not build a company town. The oil companies wouldn't build company towns. This is something that for most of us is way in the past, we hope. But the interest of government is to see rational, orderly development. And to do that, it needs to do the planning. The other thing that needs to be handled is obviously the financing. We build houses in a large city through an elaborate system of financing, which produces most of the cost of the house in the form of loans. When you move away from a large city, this has been one of our problems in the north, problems with many of the natives. They had good jobs, good income, steady employment. There was sound credit risk, but there was no one in that village who was loaning money. Now, we've in part cured that through the farmers' loan administration and part of agriculture, which has helped out. But this always is a problem. Now, if for example, bornite went. Bornite's a big copper fine. And if it's developed, it's going to be developed in a massive way, because the only way you can make money in a high-cost area on a basic resource is take it out in great quantity. So it's going to be large. It's probably up to, say, 5 pits. This is possible. Now, you put in a basic refining reduction system, so you have a lot of people there. You have a lot of transportation. You have the cars coming and going. I think there's something like 60-some percent much going in is going out, so that this is a pretty busy operation. So you develop quite a sizable town. So the economics is there. The economics is provided by the private industry. The role of government is the control of the development in terms of planning and to see that the requirements of individuals in terms of financing and so forth are made available. That's my view of it.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, did we understand that there were some more slides on perhaps large-scale redevelopment?
Well, we do have some more slides. They're conceptual in nature. We're holding them back till we exhaust the questions, because maybe some people feel it's time to depart, and we want to give them that opportunity.
George, President Wood is not signaling to cut it off.
It is adjourned.
Obviously, these are Russian and come from a variety of sources. Because of the shortage of time and so forth, I just run through them. They mostly relate around the same attempt or same proposal. Is there a focus thing here? Tell me when. I don't think there's much to say about these. In 1962 was the first news article that I saw about Russian new towns in the north. It was talking about a dome city at the time. In a few minutes you'll see some slides very similar to these that predate these by quite a bit. This is microclimate, as they call it. These are high-rise apartment structures, circular because of the smaller area to the wind and to the weather. They all tie together in a central mall, perhaps well oversized from what might actually be required. They're just concepts, although periodically you'll read in the newspaper of actual construction. I at least have never seen a picture, a photograph. A town of 2,500 to 5,000 people. A town of 10,000 to 12,000 people. I can read Russian. This is a power plant capable of providing power for a community of about 6,000 people, according to the news article. It's obviously a boat. It can travel on the rivers, and probably is used during the period of construction until the community power plants are established. Another news article from the SSR talks about the use of a plastic material that will do away with concrete in building construction as well as in dams. This is made of sawdust and ice. I'm quoting from a news release. I'm going backwards. Pardon me. Seen it before? I think that Bob Armstrong's left. This was a 1958 proposal for Frobisher Bay done by the Canadian federal government. I have some very interesting reports that go rather deeply into it. It was done under contract to private architectural engineering firms. It was not engineered. It was conceptual still. Interestingly enough, according to the reports, the reason it was stopped was that the SAC Air Base gave up at Frobisher Bay, and they found they had some empty quarters they could move into. This is Frobisher Bay again, the 1957-58 proposal. Quite in contrast to the scheme you saw earlier of the typical suburban community neighborhood development. Ralph Erskine in Stockholm is one of the best talkers on how to live in the Arctic and what to consider when you live in the Arctic. These are sketches of his, and I won't go into the details. They're amusing, they're relatively factual, they tell a good story. Incidentally, he's a Scotsman that's been practicing in Stockholm for 20-some years. He's talking about here the relationship of the structures to the landscape. He's talking about shape and the relationship to heat loss. He's talking about the difficulty of handling the winter sun, also the Arctic summer sun. He's talking about the possibility of putting these ideas together into communities. He's talking about a community on a flat plain. You saw pictures of Sapavar, or a picture of Svapavar. This is the same concept that he's introduced there, the hillside one. The same kind of a study. Backwards, isn't it? Are they all backwards? This is an idealization of all the theories that he puts into these sketches. Obviously, there's no permafrost there, but the cone is there, the low sun or lack of sun is there, and the isolation is there. Related to Sapavar is his sketch of the sun to the curves of the buildings, the backup of the high wall, you might say, to the wind. Now, on the second sketch that was Russian, there was an interesting triangular-shaped building. It ran clear through the community, separating a park area from the conventional suburban apartment house pattern. It was a wall similar to this, but serving apparently not the same purpose. It was a massive apartment structure that cut diagonally and then zigged back through the community. Again, long structures, but I didn't determine its purpose. Yeah.
Been built with the concerns that Mr. Risen has. And
To my knowledge, there are no communities in Alaska that have been built with a set of concerns or a thesis or a plan. They've grown. With the exception of Whittier, the exception of the new Valdez. None relating to these things of Erskine, no. This is a portion of Svapavara. You saw the plan earlier. I'm not going into this. I frankly haven't been able to figure it all out in the time, but I was in Montreal and saw some sketches that four students, wow. Four students had prepared for a thesis. And it was... wish somebody else could do that. Their problem was solution to a community in the most severe environment. They chose the north, and they chose an underwater town as their study. This is temperatures of ranging, let's say, shall we say 29 to 32 the year round. It's a heck of a lot better than in the winter or the summer on the Arctic coast. Next one shows the complexity of their study. Apparently it rests on the ocean bottom and surfaces at one point to allow communication, to bring in air, to bring in supplies and so forth. You saw some of this, and I won't go any further with it. Now that the military have identified it as Lisburn. Just hastily, Alaska State Housing Authority study on what a typical native community could be. Can I get that better focused? Maybe not. What's Fairbanks going to do and what could it do? There's two solutions. One is to move on out and spread out, and one is to concentrate. It seems very obvious to me that you have utilities and you have the potential of development, and all we're doing here is saying you could tie in the land from Nobu to the Chena, and you could have high density, and it could be above the floodplain, and you could have shopping and recreation on the same level as you tie across to Cushman and into the urban renewal area that's developed. You could have a downtown that could handle another 2,000-3,000 people. If you're from Fairbanks, that is. Here are a couple of semi-permanent or semi-non-permanent community schemes. Andy Golding in the back room did most of this sketching. They aren't as casual or as way out as Andy's sketches make them. This is a series of towers and cables, minimum ground contact, possibility of using prefabricated structures within, possibility of containing the heat loss for a while and developing a somewhat better outdoor condition around the structures. A similar kind of, this is the same scheme drawn even more way out and kind of fun.
Yeah, what happens when those gutter wires get covered with ice and
the wind starts to blow? Oh, they probably break off and pop holes in the plastic. Okay. This one speaks for itself, a super idea for temporary Arctic villages. I think this one's important. We need ideas. We need concepts and we need schemes and we need a lot of things better than anybody in this room can talk about now. No, I'm not saying that's it. But we have to think, and we have to think differently than we've been doing about the Arctic, because we've been thinking about it exactly as we think about Fairbanks, Anchorage, San Diego, or where are you? Another one. And it's not as foolish. Goodyear's developing that thing. There's a photograph of it up in the corner. It's used for greenhouses. It ought to be able to be used to live in. The one on the right is another one of those super, super ideas for transportable housing. Oh, that amoeba is the community. That's the tent form, or the, see it up in the upper sketch up above. What's that? It's all air supported. I thought you were going to ask about the bottom on the. Well, the university had a little experience here. It wasn't the snow, nor the wind that knocked it over. It was the guys that climbed on it. I hear. Oh, whoops. Got to work this out right. You've got to see them all. That's the last slide. There's the next to the last. There's another pole structure and guide, but with a more rigid structure. Again, that the units that you saw in the Prudhoe base sketch and model that are being put into Prudhoe Bay right now could fit into a different type of pattern, a different living orientation. And the end, and it says the problem of high density in the Arctic. Now, don't go away fast. Warren George has some more things to show us.
Well, if you want to leave, you won't hurt my feelings, but some of the people around our office
worked hard.
Did a few little schematics, and they're interesting, and we have them on these 35-millimeter slides, which we show. The first one is a concept, I hope it comes out that way, of a about a 250 man our community development composite type, similar to the one that you saw from Lisbon, but a different variety. Perfectly adaptable for some of these outlying places that aren't destined to grow. It'll be on in a minute.
It's working, Warren.
Yeah, but the film isn't on. This is the building, about a 200-man structure, self-contained, composite, bottom floor, utilities, warehousing areas, storage areas, a second floor, recreational, library, theater, playrooms, various types. Offices, the upper two floors, living quarters with lounge areas. These happen to be the floor plans. I don't believe they tell a great deal more than I've covered. Now this is an artist sketch of a planned community in a very hostile environment. Deep, bad foundation conditions on piling. The structure in red being the zone that you must be above. The composite structure taking in this place, this shape, with the cantilevered areas housing on top and progressively down on the various floors. Offices, workrooms, and utilities in the basic floor structure. Idea being perhaps a dome of a fairly permanent nature, allowing gardens throughout the year in the center plaza. So it's a concept. This is a base plan for a community of some larger size, perhaps as many as 4,000 or 5,000 people. The outer green areas being pods of multi-family units. The blue interior area being progressively up, utilities in the bottom two, community facilities of a recreational nature in the two larger ones, the second larger one being perhaps more for offices, and then progressively out recreational structures, the large red dome being a large horticultural type of garden area with an elevation view, something along this line, all above ground, so it's ventilated underneath with conveying walkways. The huge dome being the garden spot, the playground. Perhaps not needing the individual covers on the outside, perhaps needing them. This side view, same concept. And another side view, same concept. I think that's all. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You've been a wonderful audience.